Felix's wife, for some reasons often beyond him, has always been deeply in love with cricket. His passion for the game is at the fore of the BBC's number one cricket podcast and five live show, Tailenders, which he co-presents with Greg James and Jimmy Anderson. It's Always Summer Somewhere is a funny, heartbreaking, and endlessly engaging love letter to the game. Sit back, relax, because I've got Felix on the line here. Good morning to you, Felix.
Giles, hi, mate. How you doing?
I'm not too well. You know, another day in Spain, it could be worse. You know, where do we find you on the planet?
Well, that's it. When you say it's 11:30, I was like, it's not 11:30. but of course, you're an hour ahead. I'm in South East London, mate, in my flat at the moment. And it's always summer somewhere. It is sunny here, so it's working for me at the moment in London.
It's working for you at the moment. There's something, isn't there, about cricket? Now let's get a few things off the bat. See what I did there how we start with this one, because once upon a time, you know, several thousand years ago, when I was a small boy and dinosaurs walked the earth, cricket was cricket, and apart from Kerry Packer, there was no deviation from the whole thing. And now,
sure,
you turn on, you know, the excellent Five Live, other radio stations are available, and you've got, you know, you got the test match, you got the 2020, you got the 100, you got, and this new thing that comes on, that, see, you know, with teams like, I don't know, the Oval Overdogs, or the, you know, the Birmingham Fire. What's going on, Felix? What cricket are we talking about here?
I think you'll find that's Birmingham Phoenix, Giles.
That's the one, yeah. That's the one, yeah.
Oval Invincibles, I've decided I support.
The Oval Invincibles.
Yeah, well, okay, so, I mean, a very long story short, it's been controversial in England, but there's been a new competition devised to sort of squeeze into television times, which a lot of traditionalists will tell you is not cricket as they know it, because it only lasts about a couple of hours, and they've slightly redesigned the rules so that, in inverted commas, it's more easy to understand.
Right.
It's just you get 100 balls. But we've been doing some stuff on TV for it, and I've been to quite a few games, and it's actually been brilliant. The women's games especially have had really good crowds, like big families, lots of young girls in there, which is not your typical sort of cricket crowd. So in that sense, it's actually really worked in the past few weeks. It's been pretty good fun, I think.
And the thing is, though, Felix, is that we're actually talking about cricket again. And say 10 years ago, when we had the test matches and really just kind of that and the 100 overs or whatever, cricket seemed to be not connecting with, you know, most of the people in the UK. And we thought, you know, people are going to start playing basketball and the other American imports. So it's good news.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because, I mean, my book sort of partly deals with that. But one of the reasons I think a lot of people are in love with cricket is because it's obsessed with its own extinction. We're constantly talking about, are people going to like it? Are they going to get it? Is it under threat? Which is kind of half the beauty of it. But you're right. It's almost been a bit like this. And it does feel like the 100 might be one of the answers, maybe, who knows. But it turns out people do like watching batters hit the ball miles six. It has got a primitive thrill to it, which you can't deny, really.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching Test matches when I was a kid, and it was always the fearsome West Indies. And then I went to see Pakistan at the Oval with a bunch of guys that I used to when I was living in London, and that was an all day drinking binge with some guys doing something over in the corner there on a field. You know, everybody's experience with cricket is different. For personally, I grew up with cricket because I lived in the Staffordshire Shropshire borders, so cricket was very much every village had its green, very pastoral, you know, very of its time. What's your experience of cricket, and how did you fall into the love of the game?
Yeah, so that's a good question. And when I was young, it was on terrestrial television. And as a sort of detail on it, but the way I sort of fell in love with cricket actually was that we used to have these car journeys to my grandparents. And on the car journeys, we used to listen to like the White Album. I heard you play Beatles earlier. Van Morrison records and that kind of thing. And I used to be so obsessed with these records, but have no visual aid for them. And when we turned up to my grandparents, I'd turn on the cricket and I'd see the slip cordon standing at slip, like four guys who looked like a gang, talk like within jokes to each other, inspecting the back of their nails. And I kind of assumed that they might be what the Beatles looked like. So I've always had this sort of crossover in my head where music meets cricket. And from that point on, cricket's just sort of forever articulated something about my life to me. I think a big part of the book really is actually about, because I didn't realise it was going to be about for a long time, my mum dying when I was 17, and this idea of maybe as a teenager I was subconsciously trying to project some feelings of loss somewhere, and it just fortunately the cricket team lost every week. So I was able to sort of put these feelings into cricket, but I probably didn't know what I was feeling. So yeah, I think like most sport that people are obsessed with, it finds a way to explain your life back to you.
I mean, yeah. I mean, in the way that, you know, Jaws isn't just a movie about a shark. So, you know, your book, you know, isn't just a thing about cricket and wickets and overs and the whole thing. You know what? Because also, not only that, but you had a, you know, rather than be cricket, you also had another job for a while with a rather successful band, Glastonbury and all that.
yeah, that's what I did for a long time. I was the guitar player and the songwriter in the Maccabees, and that was my life from the sort of the age of 17 till only a few years ago. Yeah, that's what I did. And we used to have, you know, I used to be always trying to persuade the boys to listen to cricket, watch cricket, told I wasn't. So when the band broke up a few years ago, I've sort of, without even my own will, plunged myself into the world of it to make up for lost time.
And I mean, how did you go from, you know, rock god Felix, and I use that word advisedly, you know, the trailers, the groupies, you know, the stadiums in the States, that sort of thing, to ending up with a podcast on, you know, on cricket and a successful one at that?
It's a good question. It is a curveball, isn't it? I certainly wouldn't describe myself as a rock god, nor maybe with anybody else.
It's Monday in Spain.
Yeah. Okay, we'll go with rock god. Yeah, how did that happen? I used to do, so Greg James, who's a Radio 1 DJ, does the breakfast show, he knew that I loved cricket, and I think it was a little bit, when my band broke up, he knew that I was going to be stuck for time, and I was fortunate to have a few friends that were just like, let's do this, and Greg said, we should do a cricket podcast with Jimmy Anderson. For those who don't know, Jimmy Anderson, he... greatest England bowler probably ever. So the three of us made this sort of oddball show that we just thought was going to be a few podcasts, but it's sort of been spun out now for a few years into a very sort of left field, half comedy, half cricket show, which I don't think anyone intended in the first place. And certainly the comedy isn't always intended either. But that's what Tailenders has become, yeah.
But the thing is, I mean, you know, they all say, what is it? Nothing exists in a vacuum. I mean, you know, music doesn't exist in a vacuum. You know, you get inspired to write songs about what's going on around you, and sports are sort of the same thing. So, you know, with cricket, especially a game that is can be as fast moving or as gently paced as cricket, it can be a thinking man's game or it can be an all out slog. I mean, that's influenced by what's going on. And as you said, I mean, the whole thing is that you getting into England during, you know, a really tough time in your life with the passing of your mother, and it being reflected, if you like, you could see that in the, you know, in the England cricket results. It just goes to show that, you know, podcasts about shouldn't just be, you know, and then he scored 15 runs at the Oval. It's got to be more than that, hasn't it?
No, exactly. I think that's what Tailenders has been, and that's what came about from the book, really, is that we ended up, without design, sort of like talking about how it all feeds back into our lives. And I thought that was the really interesting thing, really, beyond any sort of cricket or results. Sort of like, as you say, we're talking about cricket. And that's sort of what the book is about, really, is exploration on why and how we put love into the places we do and what is that actually about.
So what's it like when you get to meet... Because I'm imagining that, you know, the figures of the sort of the early 90s and the mid 90s and the noughties are your sort of cricketing, you know, sort of here, as it were. What's it like when you get to meet a Hussain or an Atherton or Perish the Thought, a Tufnell?
the best word. Love Tufnells. I mean, I love them all. Yeah, that's a good question. And it's something I did. I got over after a period of time meeting musicians that had been or were heroes and sort of humanizing them. But I did find it challenging against the cricketers. And I'll tell you why. Cricketers' hands are absolutely massive, Giles. So when you go and shake a cricketer's hand, your hand tends to be inside their hand. And also because your experience of them is so, or my experience is watching them, you know, you've seen them their whole lives wearing white. when you see them wearing different clothes, it's quite a disorientating situation, or it can be. So I found that for the first couple of years of all the cricket stuff, that I was almost moved to not be able to speak proper sentences in front of them. But fortunately for the book, I have got over that since, otherwise it wouldn't be a very good book, wouldn't it?
Have you done travelling with the cricket? Have you followed teams overseas? I'm not saying you're a member of the Barnaby Army with the trombone or anything, but have you experienced cricket, you know, away from the
I've done a very solitary, the furthest from Barnaby Army travelling you can get, very solitary travelling. I feel like I keep saying this is in the book. I ended up going to Australia on my own for the Cricket World Cup to watch England, and this is the most classic English cricket experience you'll have. By the time I was flying out to the World Cup, they were flying back because they'd been knocked out by Bangladesh in the first round.
Oh no!
And so I spent a month not watching England in Australia, which was actually amazing. It was the perfect World Cup experience. I've gone out for the Ashes and all those kind of things, but like you say, not in a sort of let's get drunk for a month, more kind of like watching from the back of the stands on my own, listening to records, which I enjoy a lot.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, it can be all things to all people, and you don't have to go with a bunch of mates. You can just go and quietly, as you said, sit at the back of the stand and I'm presuming you said listen to records, you actually had a sort of some electric, you didn't actually bring the vinyl with you.
Yeah, I should probably explain that. Yeah, that's on Spotify these days. You can listen to records, can't you?
Yeah, just visions of you turning up with a couple of decks and setting up quietly in the corner there, you know?
A record player. But although there was the space to do that, would I wanted to, but no, I was just listening to Spotify.
How much of a challenge was it to actually put it, because, you know, how much of a challenge was it actually to put it down, you know, pen to paper or you know, or finger to keypad or wherever how you wanted to do it?
Well, the challenge was a little bit, but it became a different book than I'd intended it to, because the structure of the book, so to speak, is that I talk about these cricketing moments that I've projected whatever feelings onto, and then I go and, as you said, meet my heroes, like Atherton, Hussain, Tufnell, or whoever it is, and then their recollections of the same moment that I lived through sort of change the story. So the challenge really was that the book was changing all the time, like what it was actually about. And then as I got further into it, I started realising what it was actually about as well. So it has this sense of me discovering it's not actually about the cricket at all, is it, as you move through the book, which I tried to sort of write authentically, so you kind of, the reader, as it were, was like on that, I don't want to say journey, but, you know, following that with me.
Yeah, you don't want to go totally, he's on a journey. It makes you sound very American, doesn't it? A journey through life in cricket.
Yeah, exactly.
I nearly said it. What's it like getting all this the praise, though, from, you know, people like Stephen Fry saying beautifully, elegantly and passionately written book reminds me of I love cricket so much, and reading it comes to that. Stephen Fry says that you write beautifully, elegantly and passionately, and if Stephen Fry says that, you've got to have some mean chops on you, Felix.
Yeah, that was really lovely, wasn't it? I don't know what to say about that, really. I was just very moved that he took the time to read it and said that. Yeah, I certainly wasn't expecting someone like Stephen Fry to say that about the book. So, yeah, that's properly magic.
And you describe your own book. I mean, how would you describe your bowling style? And your cricket style? Because it's one of those things, because it's a bit like, I mean, I used to play rugby really badly, and I met Gavin Hastings, and he asked me if I played, which was like one of those moments of like having Ayrton Senna ask you if you drove. What's it like when you suddenly with Tufnell and they say, do you play a bit?
That's the nice thing with Tufnell, actually, as he does in the book. He does talk about, I'm a left arm spinner, so I bowl loopy, like very inoffensive spin that's very slow, and I would tend to be hit everywhere and spend the rest of the day sort of like scratching my nose on the boundary. And I felt that an affinity to Tufnell for that, because he also bowled much more effective loopy left arm spin, And he referred, in the book, he referred to me as if we were all left-arm spinners. We're a sort of genre, like a suborder together. You know, we're all tied together with by our perplexity and being like, you know, against the plane of things. So that was reassuring in that sense, but I got to tough not to say that. Although my dreams, yeah, it wasn't the handing over of England cap that I'd imagined when I spoke to her. It's all tough not, got to say, when I was a kid.
What do you hope the people will take from the book? You know, that there's that there is life in cricket, and there's you know, cricket is life, etc.
To be honest with you, I don't. No, I think I hope what people take from the book is that it's not about cricket at all. And as human beings, we sort of we choose to put our feelings places sometimes subconsciously because it's hard to process literally. And I think having any kind of being fanatical about anything, music, sport, art, whatever it is, film, I think are always helpful vehicles to navigate your own life. And I think that's what the point of the book is, rather than it being cricket specific. And so I think that anyone who's just interested in anything that has had to process something that's potentially traumatic will hopefully see something in the book.
The book is called It's Always Summer Somewhere, A Matter of Life and Cricket. It's by Felix White, who we've been speaking to. Felix, if people want to find you, because we always ask this question of authors, is there a social media presence? Can we find you online anywhere?
I'm going to say, I'm not going to give you the address of my flat. I'm at Felix White on Instagram and Twitter. You can find me there.
Super. Only begs the question, you know, at the beginning of the interview, you said that you imagined, because you listened to the White album, and you imagined the four guys being in the slips or whatever. I'm just thinking bowling styles of the Beatles now. I mean, Lennon obviously coming steaming and vicious, sort of straight at you, West Indies style. What do you think?
That's weird. You know, no one's ever asked that question before. Firstly, I would say Ringo is definitely the wicket keeper.
Definitely.
Because drummers are wicket keepers.
But he's not the best. He's not the best. He's not obviously the best wicket keeper in the Beatles, as a joke would go, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He's not even the best wicket keeper in the Beatles. Yeah, that's perfect. I don't think I need to say anymore. That's just the perfect way to sum it all up.
This book is called It's Always Summer Somewhere. It's by Felix White. Felix, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you today. Have a great day, my friend.
Pleasure, Charles. Cheers, mate. Nice one. Bye.